Good morning. Today is Monday, the 18th of March. You realize this is the first live show we've done this year?
No, I did not know that. That is
Martin Luther King and then Washington.
Oh, you mean the two of us?
Yeah, no, not my
yeah.
live show.
Yeah,
yipes.
Yeah, I don't track that.
No, I just flashed to that.
Yeah, we have had to record quite often, didn't we?
Yeah. You get all these days off.
But it's glorious seeing you, Brian.
Yeah. No, glorious was yesterday with the weather.
Yeah.
Today is nice.
Yeah. Not raining.
Yeah. A little chill. Well, at least it was chilly. I got in a little earlier than normal this morning, like 6 o'clock. Anyway, without boring everybody to tears, we'll just move on. Okay, are you ready for your question, sir?
Oh, boy. Let's hear it.
Why is the bugle call at day's end called taps? Probably has nothing to do with the beat.
Hmm. No, I'm thinking through the words, because there's actually
you think it's
lyrics.
An acronym?
That's what I was thinking, but no, I have no idea.
In the 17th century, the British borrowed a Dutch army custom of sounding a drum and bugle to signal soldiers it was time to stop socializing and return to their barracks for the night. The Dutch called it tap-toe, meaning shut off the taps, and the abbreviated taps became the signal for tavern owners to turn off the spigots on their beer and wine casks. After lights out, taps signals that the soldiers were safely at home, and that's why it's played at funerals.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know wine came in barrels. Duh. You almost responded to that.
Yeah.
I thought I'd catch you off before you really sounded kind of goofy.
Well, I would have never guessed that.
A signal for the barkeeps to shut things down.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, we knew it had something to do with the tap and the beer pole, right?
Yeah, I'm a morning person, so that wouldn't happen for me. I wouldn't be there when they're shutting it down.
Yeah. Well, it depends on when they shut it down. It can be at 3 in the afternoon, too, depending on how things are going. Oh, so we've got, do you guys follow the budgets much, the federal budget or the state budget?
No, we don't. I kind of wait till it's all done.
Oh, okay, when it hits Main Street. There was a number that was referenced this morning in Hugh Hewitt that the current administration has a 0.9% increase in military.
Yet their budget is the biggest ever.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's still more, but it's less than, and that it cost America because of not labor necessarily, but distribution channels to get the materials, 4 times what it does the Chinese to build a boat.
Okay, say that again.
Because we don't manufacture the raw materials
or
gather the raw materials ourselves. We're having to buy them from, like China, and some of these other places that we're paying middlemen, multiple stages of that, to before the boats are even built.
Well, you know, our decision to move industry to other countries, yes, there's less of that here. Which I think was the goal, but it's still being done. Plus, you have the cost of transportation. So I don't know that we gain much if you're looking at environmental purposes. And our standards are higher, so we should try and bring that manufacturing back here.
Well,
but
that's just me. And I haven't thought about Ross Perot in so long.
Yeah. The great sucking sound.
Yes. Yeah.
I think he'll go down in history for just that comment.
That and Dana Carvey doing his some of the parodies of him and who was his VP candidate? He was a military fella.
Oh, you're
kind of like
on that.
Went. He really wasn't all there, and that's kind of what the spinoffs always were. With the budgets, though, there's a tenor that's set. You know, because I think that there's a surprising number of businesses that rely on customers that are state-funded, federal-funded, county-funded. You know, to use another presidential reference from the past, trickle down into where we are because of our heavy reliance on government in all kinds of different forms. So I'm kind of a little surprised that you guys don't track some of that stuff. Just, you know, one quarter out kind of thing.
Yeah, we're, you know, if we were a big bank, you know, like a U.S. bank or Wells Fargo or something that, you know, was had...
Throughout the state?
Had big industrial clients and so forth. We're Main Street people. Yeah. So, you know, how much is the local merchant actually impacted by some of those things? In a small degree, yes, but in a large one, not really.
Not as much.
The bigger issue for me with these budgets is going to be the impact on inflation. And that's what really hurts our customers right now, our clients, you know, as well as the bank itself, is the increasing cost and the shrinking dollar. And you go out and continue to expand our debt and expand spending, especially since we're borrowing the money to do it or printing it. You're looking at inflationary pressures once again.
Yeah, well, did we have, was it last week? We heard that it was a little bit higher than what was anticipated. And I guess Powell this week is supposed to make some kind of like an indication of what's going on. I've heard everything from 4 or 5 reduction moves this year. Now they're thinking, what, 3 or 4 is kind of what the scuttlebutt is.
The speculation is all over the map as to what they're going to do. But, you know, the target inflation is 2%. And right. Our perception of the perception that's being pressed upon us about inflation is erroneous. And so we need to understand exactly what those numbers mean.
Well, that sounds like a cliffhanger to me. Oh, boy, right up there with TAPS. We'll be sure the taps are off so we can explain things clearly when we come back.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning. It's 8:24. We're back to talk shop. Actually, we're back to learn this morning about why the inflation numbers that are reported aren't really the inflation numbers we should be looking at. With Mr. Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank.
Well, you get the impression if you listen to politicians that when the inflation rate goes from 9% to 3%, that prices are coming down. But what that means...
They're just compounding less, right?
They're increasing at a slower rate, but they are still going down. So, if inflation went to zero, the prices that we pay now are still the prices we pay. It means they don't go down. For prices to go down, inflation would have to be negative.
And everybody says negative inflation, or deflation, is a bad thing.
Correct.
Which I haven't figured out why, but that's okay. I'm sure we'll learn about that one in the near future.
Well, that's just that now businesses have decreasing revenues. Now, if you have decreasing revenues but decreasing costs, and how many employees are going to take a pay cut during deflation?
CPI.
Good luck. Yeah. Selling that one.
Well, now, there are times that we've heard over the years when currencies are revalued. Is that just so the pennies or the equivalent of a penny has some purchasing power, or a nickel or a dime or coins?
I'm not familiar with the term or the process, so to comment would be in total ignorance.
I'm sure that you saw many of the same pictures in your high school history books of World War II that I did, when they were carrying around, or they would show up
in Germany,
wagon full of money for two loaves of bread, because they've been devalued to that extent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that still isn't what is happening now. I mean, the Deutschmark is still around, so it must have been revalued. Or you've got $1 million piece of, or a million Deutschmark that has the same buying power as what?
As a dollar, yeah.
Used to, yeah.
I don't know how they did that. But it had to have been done. You're right.
Yeah. Huh. So, is the number that is represented or reported as inflation, where it comes from, has that changed? Because you hear non-farm producing, or they take out food and gas, or they'll subtract this or that, and they have a different name, but it's still kind of in that same arena that we hear reported.
So there's an old adage that if you torture the data long enough, it'll confess to anything. And so when we talk about the inflation rate, yes, they play with it. And what they do, it's the basket of goods. So if you look at what is going to be measured, then and you want to alter it, you can take things out or put things in the basket that will then impact inflation up or down.
So for political expediency.
Correct.
Now, do financial experts or economists do the same exercise?
Well, you're making an assumption that economists academics aren't in lockstep with the politicians.
Well, I'm thinking
so they're the ones
an independent,
right,
rather than part of.
So there isn't that I'm aware of. Now, what's really interesting is in Europe, their CPI index does not include housing. And at first I scratched my head with that because it's a major expense for us. But housing, if you stop and think about it, for most people, housing is relatively consistent. You have a mortgage, and the mortgage payment doesn't go up.
So the fluctuations, unless you have like an ARM.
So what happens is by including housing to some degree, you have an influence that would taper the amount of inflation.
Kind of dummy it down.
Right. And so, but that's just an example of what can be moved in and out. For instance, eggs, at the height of inflation were one of the things that went up the most.
Yeah, goofy.
Yeah, it was like 40% increase in the price of eggs. Well, if I want to reduce the inflation rate, I can remove eggs from the basket. Now, I'm not saying they did, but that's an example of what you can do.
The curious thing that I recall is that gas and fuel was taken out. But it's so embedded in so many of the other niches that are reported that you really can't take it out.
Yeah, I think, and this is, I'm not an economist, but the two things that I think impacted the inflation rate the most were, one is the new policies on petroleum products and petroleum companies. And so, certain things were done to make it harder and harder to generate petroleum products. So energy costs went up. And as you just mentioned, that is reflected in almost every product you buy because it takes energy to produce it. It takes energy to deliver it. It takes energy to sell it. So you have all those things in the train go up.
Yeah, it's almost like you got not a middleman, you got a team.
Right.
And everybody's taking a little piece, and it's not ever documented. So you don't see it as a independent factor.
Correct.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
dreaming big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning. The dank dude. Sorry, you're a little damp this morning. Yeah. The dank dude, John Dalby. Oh boy, there was a phrase that was used, and I guess it's always being used by somebody. You know, tax the rich. It's like, yeah, okay. But I think anybody that has done even a modicum of look-see or research, you could take 100% of what they make, and it doesn't matter. It's such a small percentage that the battlefield is really the middle class. And nobody wants to say that because that's the voting block. So you've got what reality is versus what is reported versus what is said. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times they are different. I suspect that it's not unreasonable for us to get too confused with things that are financial or economy-based. You go, they're all lying, and you move on. Then you just pay your bills and pay mm-hmm. your taxes. I think I've asked this of you in the past. What are the canaries that you look at or the bank looks at for economic health of the country? Or the state, take your pick, whichever one. What are those things that you monitor?
Well, GDP is a big one. Fairly obvious, but it really is. It's very important, and if you look at the country, your ability to repay loans, which is of course the concern that we have for the bank itself. But also, if you have healthy borrowers, you have a healthy community. If you have a healthy community, et cetera, et cetera. So GDP is very important, although it can swing wildly and doesn't impact our local community. Our local economy is relatively insulated from the national economy. We don't have the big ups and we don't have the big downs.
But less and less with internet.
That is correct. It has that insulatory factor has reduced over the last 20 years, but it's still there. Okay, it's not as strong as it used to be.
Yeah, it's diminished,
right?
But still there.
It used to be really strong when we were a resource-based economy. We're no longer there, which starts putting us more dependent on other areas for revenue. With that said, GDP's a big one. Inflation is the other one that we look at. And, of course, interest rates. Those are the three big ones for us to look at.
Interest rates or the 10-year?
Yes. So your 10-year is reflective of long-term rates.
Right.
And then the Fed target rates are the ones that are reflective of short-term rates. Now, what's important in those two things is, are long-term rates higher than short-term rates? Because when they invert, when long-term rates are lower than short-term rates, that's a real sign that we're heading towards recession.
Or historically.
Yes.
That's a sign.
Yeah.
So with the etch-a-sketch that has happened in the last little bit, that maybe up is down and sideways is purple, had the feeling that you needed to reset what you're looking at because these things are now different?
The fundamentals of the economics that I learned in college, which was a long time ago, those have changed. And those were hard and fast for years and years, for centuries. And then all of a sudden now, a lot of those economic relationships have changed to the point where we're doing things we've never done before. And we have no idea what the long-term outcome is going to be. You know,
but now
quantitative easing was one.
But it's been a couple of years now with some of those. Was it the COVID? Was it 2019 that was kind of looking backwards? Is that the starting point of this new approach? Was it previous to that? I mean, what, if you're looking at trends or historical and trying to come up with what is real today, how far back do you go can you go for your comparatives?
The big diversion from traditional economics took place during the Obama era. His policies were anti-business. You know, that nobody wants to say that, but that's what it was. and so the economy started to crash, and the Fed had to beef it up. And prior to that era, the lowest possible interest rate for the Feds was 1%. Well, we went to zero to a quarter. We it's like putting the accelerator through the floorboard. And that wasn't enough to spike the economy. So they tried for the first time quantitative easing, which is a acronym for print money.
those wheelbarrows that we were referencing earlier. Yeah.
So they started buying bonds and mortgage-backed securities, which kept interest rates really low for mortgages. So everybody was really happy because you could get mortgages, you know, in the less than 3% range.
Well, and that triggered so many other industries. Health, I guess. Even though it might have been artificial health.
Traditionally, and we were talking about deviations, traditionally, when you triple the money supply, we should see outrageous inflation. But we didn't. And I've had it explained to me why we didn't a number of times, and it doesn't make sense to me. And probably that's because my mind is so simple. But it should have caused rampant inflation, but it did not.
Because we were in a recession?
I don't know. I don't understand it.
Okay.
The way it was explained to me the best was the money that was printed ended up in the money center banks, and it didn't go out to customers. Nobody was borrowing.
Oh, so it didn't hit.
It actually never went anywhere, is what they're saying.
Okay.
Now, I don't know that to be true.
I mean, it doesn't make logically, that doesn't make sense. Why would you print it then if it doesn't get outside?
Exactly. So
don't worry about it.
Exactly.
Save some cloth. Yeah.
So I'm not understanding. That's the part I'm not understanding. And, you know, I got to tell you, I don't spend a lot of time studying it.
But if 08, 09 is a reference point, that coincides with something else. Buying the station.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good move, Brian.
Yeah. And the timing was extraordinary.
Congratulations.
Too.
Yes. Yeah.
So you've got now a 15-year reference, at least of what kind of sort of is common today. Is that enough?
So today what we're seeing is the Fed have raised interest rates, and this time they've raised them in an unprecedented rapid pace.
The accelerator
instead of
again.
Instead of going up by 0.25% increments over a long period of time, they went up by 0.75% increments in a very short period of time. So you have this huge shock to the system, which has created all kinds of problems. So we've tried something different. And at the same time, they're now not reinvesting. The Fed's not reinvesting, so we're seeing quantitative easing shrinking very slowly. It's going to take, you know, decades for us to get out of what we did with the money supply.
But that's independent of the deficit.
That's correct.
So the fact that it's shrinking isn't going to necessarily alleviate all things.
Correct, because we have the government that wants to spend a great deal of money that we don't have. And, which is going to create, again, the inflationary impacts. In fact, we talked earlier about the impacts of inflation. My opinion was fuel prices and two, government spending. Those two things fueled the inflation that we saw.
Or living with.
Correct. Still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about, we hear this phrase, unfunded mandates. Governments, big government passes on to little government. We want you to do this, and oh, by the way.
There's no funding for it.
Yeah. Have a nice day. The impact of those decisions in the private sector, I'm thinking of solar panels as a particular one, or having the EV plug-ins. Not, you know, the EV plug thing is not that expensive, okay, but it's another mandate. Solar panels is a mandate. All these various things also, I would think, tend to dampen any kind of economic recovery because it's going to cost more money to do something, whether it's buying a house or some of these other options that are there. And we still don't have, what do you do with a Tesla battery when it's dead? Answer. Somebody's going to be paying for it, and I don't think it's going to be the government.
Yeah. I walked into a dealership and saw these giant crates, and they're batteries for cars. And it means a giant crate. I mean, these are huge. It's just one battery.
Right.
If that's the battery for one car, they must be putting the old one back in there and shipping it somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, some of those impacts that are coming down, coming around the corner for us, I would think have a chance to decelerate any kind of economic activity too. Are they not recognized, or are they just factored into the everything that's being reported?
Yeah, I'm too ignorant to know what happens with those batteries. I haven't spent any time on it, but it's obviously a toxic material that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think everything can be shipped to Nevada.
We've talked about storing them in your backyard, but.
Oh, wait till my backyard is in the flood zone.
Yeah. We'll talk. Yeah. Then they'll float off.
Yeah, yeah. No, then we get state involvement too. All right.
Yeah, the dilution is solution is dilution.
Yeah,
is that what it
yeah.
is?
Yeah. How big do you want your fish to be? We'll take care of that for you. It's 8:46.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:51, giving away all the secrets during the commercial breaks with John Dalby. So what kind of sense do you have? Is summer going to be where we start to see a little bit of relief? Is it going to be the fall? The Middle East war is, it's not in oil-producing states yet. We don't see it with Russia and Ukraine yet. But the international political arena obviously is going to have some impact. I mean, if it was smooth, it would be one thing. If these wars continue, it's going to be different. If something else breaks out in one of the hot spots, how do you hedge to the future or look to the future?
So you have November is a huge date. So if you look at what's going to be done by the current administration between now and November, it will be different than what's done from November for the next 4 years.
Right.
So I think we're going to see some favorable trends this year.
Now, Fed governors are supposed to be apolitical. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Yes.
And they're supposed to be immune from political pressures. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Yes, we've seen the history of their actions to be contrary to that statement.
Yes.
So with that said, I go back to my point, and that is between now and November, we're in pretty good shape.
Do you think
comparatively
we're going to see cost of money come down significantly to start?